episode, Jordan Sullivan and I talk about the reality of endurance nutrition and all of the things that can go wrong during an event if you haven't quite planned it properly. We talk about the impacts that nutrition and hydration can have during a longer endurance event, and also things that you can do to try and prevent what happened to Jordy from happening to you. Stay tuned while Jordy talks to you about his most recent experience, and I hope you can take away some points to prepare your next event.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome back, Loz. What an intro. Another stellar intro.
I know. I think, I don't know, honestly, I think after that last one, it's kind of just come to both of our attentions that after the first few, you know, I started to nail just being thrown on the spot, and now I just crack under pressure. But anyway, we're back, and we're going to talk about what happened on the weekend, because I think it's really important to talk about that, you know, as health professionals and as nutrition and hydration professionals, ultimately, which is what we are. Sometimes we don't always get it right. And what we're going to be talking about is what Jordy got up to over the weekend. And ultimately, you're running around Brisbane for 7 hours, right? So on the weekend, Jordy did what's called the Enduro Challenge, where you ultimately run as many kilometers as possible over 7 hours, correct?
Yeah. So you pretty much, there's a 10K loop, 5K loop, and then you jump on like a 500 meter loop, and you just pretty much run as much as you can in 7 hours. But for me, I have a race coming up, 100K in like 4 weeks. So my coach and I thought, this is a good idea. And I was going to have to get a long run in this weekend anyway, but it was going to be a good idea to practice our nutrition and hydration strategies for the first like 60Ks. I was only meant to run 60Ks. I ended up doing about 65, overcooked it a little bit, but, and I'll go into it why I wanted to do that. But yeah, it was a good chance to just practice these things. But like Loz said, the old saying of coaches need coaches too is super true, right? Like I run a hydration company and, you know, am a performance dietitian, have been for years and years and years. And sometimes we do get it wrong. And that's what we want to talk about today, is what happened in that race, because I actually finished that race in a pretty terrible state. And I have been like that before in other races, but I definitely do not advise it. And I want to kind of talk through with you guys what happened, so when you hear it, you can take the same lessons that I took out of it, because ultimately it was a huge, huge, huge learning for me. And it's hugely valuable. Like I'm so glad I did it. And as you guys might think it's weird when I talk about how rough of a state I was in, that me saying that was super valuable, but it was really valuable, because now I know at certain times, like what I really have to focus on coming up to this next race.
Yeah. And it reiterates the fact that we always tell people to practice their nutrition in training, and also to never try anything new on game day. And I know you didn't do that because you obviously had a game plan in mind, but it just highlights, hopefully, you know, other people can learn from hearing what happened with your situation, that it is really important to try and have a plan and to practice these things, because otherwise it can ultimately dictate what happens come race day. And as we've said with endurance sports, nutrition and hydration is such a big part of it. And we spoke about this quite a lot earlier when we did those episodes on endurance nutrition, but it always helps as well to have that personal experience. And hopefully, yeah, other people can learn from your not so nice moment.
Yeah, and I think that's such an important point too. Never ever try anything new on race day. Like technically this was a race day, but I kind of looked at it as a training day, like a bit more glorified training. And I'm glad I did it, because if I made the mistakes that I made on the weekend in my actual race, I would be shattered. And I probably wouldn't have finished. I probably would have DNF'd, to be honest, if I made these mistakes over there. But essentially, I'll give you guys a rundown of what happened. So the race started at 4:30 in the morning. So we all split off. I, at the time, didn't realize that this enduro race, that there wasn't too many of us that were just running it individually. I didn't realize this was like a team effort, and there was all these people, and I didn't understand that you could send like one person out for 10Ks and swap in, and then someone else could do it. So that was my first mistake, and that's just a rookie error of mine. So when I started the race, I kind of came out, and like every race, anyone that's ever done anything, where you know you've got a pace in mind that your coach is like, you've got to stick to it. And a lot of people think like, oh, it's going to be hard keeping that. It's not. It's hard slowing down to that pace, because all the adrenaline, the endorphins, like that's a real skill, being able to chill and be like, no, I got to just hit my rhythm and trust that I can keep this rhythm. And over the long term, it's going to pay off. And I definitely just, I saw these three guys go out and I thought, you know what, like I want to compete with the top guys in this sport. So I'm going to run out and I'm going to go with them. And so I ended up hitting splits that was way faster than what my coach wanted me running. It's like over a minute faster than per kilometer than what my coach wanted me running this race at. So that was my first stuff up. But it was also important to me as a learning curve, because as I got, say, about 20 Ks in, I ended up taking the lead in this race. But again, it was a 7-hour race that I had to, there's no way I was going to be maintaining this. And I'd never done that before. So this is the first point. It's like, okay, well, maybe I can learn about how my body handles food and nutrition when I'm trying to keep this pace. And I was on a pretty flat course, which was good. And I came around the first lap and we did the first 10K lap and I pulled off, and the other two guys leading didn't pull off. And I was like, oh, that's gutsy. And I ended up, it was pretty good. Like, you know, I went in and I had a set strategy, and like most people, like if you're stopping at checkpoints, like you have your drop bags, and I had 60 grams worth of carbohydrates that I was planning on getting every hour. So I'm not big on gels or anything. I'm nothing against them. I don't love the artificial flavor. And I think like the texture and taste in my mouth, I just hate it for whatever reason. So I'd much prefer like natural things like bananas, dates, and even sandwiches and, you know, honey sandwiches, things like that. They just seem to work better for me. So first stop, got that in, got some liquid carbs in as well, put some hydrolyte, Maximus and Gatorade liquid carbs in, and then threw some electrolytes in, kept going. Everything was good. I ended up taking the lead that loop. And then it wasn't until about 30 Ks that I realized how little I was actually drinking out there. And I think this is where the first big learning came, is that because I was going at such a faster pace than what I was used to, I just was covering more distance and I was probably putting in the same amount of fluid as if I was going much slower. So overall, when you multiply that across quite a long distance, 20, 30 plus Ks, it turns out I really didn't put that much fluid in. So I ended up getting to a point about just when I came into the 40K one, and I remember tapping on my bags and going, oh man, they're like still pretty full. Like, and I've only swapped these out once and I'm doing the maths in my head. I'm thinking I'm about 3 hours, 3 and a bit hours. I think at 40 Ks, I was about 3.5 hours in also. And I was thinking, man, I've only had about not even 2 liters of fluid now. And then I'm doing the maths. I know that I sweat 1.5 liters at least for the first 2 hours. And then it drops back to about a liter. And after about 4 or 5 hours, I go down to about 0.5 liter. So I'm very aware of what my sweat rate is. And I know I'm a very big sweater and a very big salt sweater. So for me, hydration is probably the biggest component of being successful in any type of endeavor that includes endurance. So that is when I really stuffed up. When I got to that first one, I thought 40 Ks in, I've stuffed up here. And I want to explain to people why I'd stuffed up and I'd hit the point of no return, and why this is a good learning curve for anyone listening to this. Because once you get to a certain level of dehydrated, it is very, very difficult to bring your body back to a level of hydration. And I would say near impossible unless you just start walking. Because to get your body back to a level of hydration, once you're 4, 5, 6% dehydrated, it just takes time. Like your body needs time to get that fluid in. It needs to transport the fluid from your stomach into your gut, then your gut to your blood, then into your blood, get to the cells. And then getting from that fluid into the cells can take hours and hours and hours. So if you're running a race, unless you're doing a 24 plus hour race, you've pretty much gone too far. You've stuffed up. If you get that dehydrated, you've pretty much stuffed up. But it's not uncommon to be that dehydrated. I was just that dehydrated way too early in the race, and it caused heaps of problems.
And what did you have in your pack? Did you have just plain water? Did you have an electrolyte supplement, a carb powder? What was in the packs that you had on you outside of the aid station?
So the packs that I was running, I always carry electrolytes. So I try to mix up anywhere between 800 milligrams to 1,000. Makes it pretty salty. But like I said, I'm a very salty sweater and I've tested this many, many times, different environments. So I try to get in at least 800 megs per hour, milligrams, if anyone's listening, don't understand what megs are, but that's really salty though, but that's what you're trying to get in. And I think at a certain time when you're running, like they taste really good. Like I really enjoy that salt. I wouldn't say they taste great, but like you have it and I know, like, yeah, this is exactly what my body needs when it comes in, because you're sweating and losing so much salt in that sweat. But at the aid station, as I was sitting down, then I was eating carbs, drinking carbs, and attempt to get fluid. But even there, I just, because I wanted to keep this time, and to be fair, I'll admit I was ego running once I figured out what all the times were and everyone was. And that ego running stuffed me massively, because I realized those two guys that at the start that I was like gunning for the first 20Ks, they were part of like a team enduro event. So those two guys only ran like 20 or 30Ks and jumped out. And then I was stuck to run like another 4 or 5 hours, but I was like outpacing them. So I'm like, oh, you're an idiot. You've just stuffed this up completely. All in the learning curve. But that dehydration, I remember getting to about 45 kilometers. And we'll have this discussion about cramps, because cramps are a very, very interesting thing. And straight off the bat, we don't really know why we get cramps. There's like two leading theories right now. And I think one is more correct and one is correct, but not in a correct way. And I'll explain what that means, is that when we get cramps, we think at our best knowledge of it, and tell me if you disagree, Loz, is that it's a neuromuscular disconfiguration. What that means is the way that our muscles contract it, we obviously, our brain tells our muscles to contract, and within that process, something goes wrong. And that's why we cramp up and it goes down. It's so painful, and that can be quite erratic and quite long, quite painful. The other theory is that it's our hydration or electrolytes, which in the research doesn't really seem to hold up that much. But when you dig into it a bit deeper, we see that your hydration status and your electrolyte status directly affect the neuromuscular status of your muscle. So in a weird way, in an indirect way is a better word, that hydration electrolyte status does affect your muscle. And that's what I experienced. I experienced that really bad. And I know for a fact from all my training that I've done that after I get about 5-6% dehydrated, but which is a lot, again, beyond the point of return, you should never ever get there in a race. You should be keeping up with those fluids and try to stay within anywhere between 1 and 3 if you can. But as soon as I felt that little twinge in my hamstring, because I'm not a guy who's ever really cramped, and in my whole athletic career, I've never cramped. And it wasn't until I was doing things where I got to this level of dehydration where I experienced it. And yeah, at about 45 Ks, I just got the cramp from hell that just shot up my left leg, and it was really bad. And I was like, you know what? And I guess like that's the fun thing about ultra endurance running, right? Is a lot of it, yeah, it's running and it's physical, but a lot of it is it's mental problem solving. It's mental problem solving in very physically harsh conditions. And that's why it's appealing to a lot of people. And this was just a huge problem to solve. And I guess coming on from that, it was tough. Like it was pretty much ended up running 65 Ks total, but 20 Ks of that was really bad cramps. And I realized once I had to like stop and sit down and figure this out, I was like, man, you stuffed up so long ago. You stuffed up so long ago because you ego ran, and you ran at a pace that I'm not used to drinking at for this pace. And then I was drinking as if I was running way slower, and then put in way too little fluid. And I ended up getting to this point of dehydration where there was no way that I could get out of it. There was no way I could get out of it. It was either going to maintain or get worse. And that was pretty much the state of it. And to be fair, like I dropped, I think I ended up coming 4th or 5th overall. I would have, and I'm not tooting my own horn, but like I would have very comfortably like come in like 1st or 2nd if I didn't make this stupid, which I would call like a very rookie mistake, like very, very rookie mistake, I think. And it's just, it goes to the point, like you can get everything right, like in your training and do all of this, but come race day, like even the guy that's meant to know about all this and has a hydration company, I can stuff up. So it's important, like Loz said, you need to practice this in your training. You need to get it right.
And under, you know, competition circumstances as well, it's also the excitement, the adrenaline pumping. As you mentioned, your ego run most of the event. So sometimes that plan is very well intentioned, but when you're in the moment, it can be hard to focus on, okay, yeah, I've got to do X, Y, Z, follow the plan. So I think obviously, yes, it is great to have a plan. Sometimes it can be easy to go off the plan, but I think here again, reiterating the importance of having a plan. And two, now another important factor that we can all learn from you, Jordy, is don't ego run, even if you're feeling good. But yeah, cramping is a funny one, and it is hard because so many people ask about it. And I think there's no denying that there is a relationship between hydration and cramping. I think there's definitely a relationship there, but I don't think it's as black and white as a lot of people think in terms of I didn't drink enough or I didn't have enough salt, so I cramped. I do agree with what you're saying in terms of it comes down more so, you know, resulting in muscle fatigue and impacts at the muscular level. And as you mentioned, yes, we spoke about it the other day, that hydration, you know, fluid is super important for many reasons, but one of the roles that water plays in the body is, you know, lubrication and muscular contraction. So there's no denying that, yes, hydration status does impact how our muscles function. But I think, yeah, it's not necessarily a direct cramping and hydration. It's okay, the hydration impacts our muscular function, which then results in the cramping. And it is an interesting one, but as well, you know, it comes down to your physical conditioning, you know, what are your stretching habits like, environmental conditions, temperature, you know, muscular predisposition as well. Some people, I think, seem to cramp more than others. So it is an interesting topic, but it's unfortunate that you had to persevere for so long with a cramp. Where did you get it, by the way? Because calves and hamstrings seem to be the most common.
Yeah, I knew I was in a bad, like, obviously doing my job with TFD and working with fighters, like, I've dealt with dehydration a lot, like probably more than any other person as well. And I've seen it, and like, I was getting it in my hamstrings, obviously, because of running, and then the way you change your gait. My calves weren't too bad because I generally changed my gait to take pressure off them at a certain distance. But then I knew it was bad when I was getting in my groins, because I've never had cramps in my groin, and it was a weird thing having your adductors cramp and like pull things in. And then I knew it was bad after when I got home and I was rehydrating and going through that process, and I moved, and under my chin, like the, you know, the big muscle that covers the front of your neck, all of that started cramping. And that's actually very, very bad if things like that start happening, and really showed like how bad it would have been, and my blood electrolytes would not have been good. But I think further to Loz's point, when we think about cramping and all of this, there are potentially a lot of things that can cause it, but I think it's a spectrum, and it's a continuum of many factors. Like, it can be as simple as the amount of glycogen you have in your muscle. Like, that's a huge thing. And some people can cramp from that. Like, if you haven't fueled up or carb loaded properly for that event, and then you go out and you're just relying on blood glucose, which eventually you're not going to be able to keep up with that. Your body's going to need to tap in that glucose. It's not there. You could cramp. And that's a real thing that can happen. Hydration, obviously, electrolytes, not keeping up with your electrolytes. You're sweating, obviously, changing your blood osmolarity. You need to have electrolytes to keep that balance. The other one that I think a lot of people brief over is just conditioning of your muscles. And this is another thing for me, which I realized in hindsight, is like, I did a full training load for a full training week and then went into this. So my load was probably about 25% higher than what it was and higher than what I should have increased it. And I think a lot of people make the mistake of increasing their training volume too much. And I used to hate doing the 10% every week and going up. And like, when you're a bit more experienced, you can do more. But really, I have found whenever I've gotten injured is when I've gone outside that 10%. Increasing slowly by 10% is a factor. And so that's obviously going to be a factor that contributed to it as well. So I went out and increased my overall load for the week by 25%. And it was probably at that 45K mark where I overdid my overall training load for the week. So not only was I dehydrated from not putting adequate fluid in, I wasn't keeping up with my electrolytes. I was doing okay on my fuel, but obviously not as good as what I should have been. But then I was also putting way too much volume on those muscles for that training week. So it was almost like a perfect storm where, sitting back now and talking about it, it's like, yeah, if you didn't cramp, it would have been surprising.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the beauty of, you know, looking back and reflecting on situations, is it's okay, yeah, definitely wasn't just one thing that led to this, but a combination of multiple things. Before we kind of address the aftermath of the event, how did you prepare for it? Did you do a carb load, or, you know, how did you, I know you had a really heavy training week leading in, but did you do anything different? I know we've spoken in the past, sometimes before your big runs, you'll actually do a carb load, you know, just as in practice, because we always talk about practicing these things in training. But did you do a carb load, or how did you prepare your body for the event?
Yeah, I probably did a 2-day carb load, not as strictly as I should have been. But again, like, I know it sounds weird, but like 7 hours of running doesn't really, it sounds weird if people aren't in this world, but 7 hours of running to me is not crazy. Like, it's not like, I can very comfortably go out for 12, 15 hours and that's okay. So 7 hours, like, yeah, you still obviously have to fuel properly, but it's like, I'm not going to be crushing 1,000 grams of carbs all these days just to put it, because I was pretty comfortable with like my fueling strategy as well. I just stuffed up on the hydration. But yeah, Friday, Saturday definitely did. I was aiming for about 600 to 700 grams, which is still a pretty good amount for me, which is about 8 grams, 8 to pushing that 10 grams per kilo. So it's not the super upper limits when you go into the 12 grams per kilo, but it's a good amount. And again, I'm trying to get my body more comfortable for this, for these longer, you know, 100 kilometer, 100 mile races where you do have to do a really intense carb load, but 2 days of it, but I was still training, right? So that's the other thing that complements a carb load is you reduce the amount of training that you're doing. You taper it off, which helps you build up that glycogen, which again, I didn't really do. Like I had one day off before I went.
Go back and listen to our podcast, hey?
Yeah, exactly, right? But again, your ego can get in. And I think at the end of the day, like it would have went well. Like I think that whole race would have went well if I just kept your ego to the side. You know what it comes down to? And I'm like, a lot of my clients are going to give me grief about this, but I should have just listened to my coach, right? Like I should have just run the pace my coach said to and practice all the checkpoints like my coach said to. But yeah, I guess like Loz said, when you're out there and the guns are going and people are running and people are screaming at you, the adrenaline can get the better of you.
You mentioned as well, because you don't really like having gels that much and you prefer actual food. I think there's going to be a lot of people that have that same mindset. So can you quickly explain to us what types of things you had at your aid station and what you find really works best for you? Just given we're talking about what went well and what went awfully, let's at least focus on some of the positives here.
Yeah. I like getting liquid carbs. So like sports drinks are really good. I'll wash down my carbs with sports drinks. I usually go bananas and dates work really well for me. I really, really like, I like how they feel when I digest them. They feel really good. I don't feel heavy on them. I also like pancakes. I'll use pancakes or pikelets. But I'll often make them myself and make them a bit lighter. I don't like how dense some of the store-bought ones can be. And on them, I'll usually put peanut butter or honey or Nutella and honey on those, or jam on them. And those are pretty much the go-to that I'll rotate between. What I'll also use every now and then are the fruit bars that you can get, you know, like this, the strawberry or the apple, the mixed berry fruit bars. They're super light and they've got a good amount of carbs and they're very low fiber as well. I know they look like they might be high fiber, but they're quite processed. So there's not a lot of fiber in there. Between those four things, that's pretty much how I load up with my carbs, with the sports drink as well. And I can pretty comfortably get 60 grams in with that. And then I don't love taking like candy or anything with me, but later on, if I find I'm struggling with bigger volume, like say like a banana is great, but it can be a bit of volume, like when you get into it, and having something like jelly beans or, you know, Allen's snakes or something can give you a lot of carbs for a pretty small dose. And that's where something like a gel becomes really handy, right? Like you can get a goo gel and it's not a lot of volume for a good amount of carbs. Like, but just for me, I just hate the mouthfeel of it. And that mentally puts me off more than what I think the physical, obviously the physical is important, but then the mental, I just can't deal with that. So I will take out those things if I find I'm struggling to actually eat and the volume gets too much for me.
And I think as well, you know, during an event like that, looking forward to carbs is kind of a bit exciting. And similar with the mouth rinse that we've mentioned before, it's that positive feedback loop that we get to our brain. Ooh, carbs, you know. So if you're thinking, oh gosh, I've got to have another gel, it's not very motivating or, you know, good for our mindset. So having things, yeah, that you actually like to have, because it's great, you know, if your running mate loves gels, but don't let them put that on you if you don't, because at the end of the day, the aim of this game is to find what works best for you and what suits you, your palate, your preferences. So good to hear, Jordy.
Yeah, the mouth rinse is absolutely a thing. I used to think this is kind of stupid when I did other sports, and even I tried it in MMA when we were cutting weight, getting guys the mouth rinse, and it just didn't go well because it was kind of cruel to a point because they can't swallow it.
I think in that
sense it's not good. But when you're out doing this, obviously it takes about anywhere between 20, 30, 40 minutes, depending on your own physiology, when you actually drink that, for it to get from your stomach intestine into your blood. Like obviously you've got amylase in your mouth that'll start breaking down sugars and all of that. But I find I will feel if I'm on a long trail run or doing a race or whatever, and I take like a sports drink or even a bite of carbs when I'm out there, there is almost an instant gratification that comes, or an instant pep up, and your brain is like, okay, we've got carbs coming. Whether or not that physically changes anything, mentally, I think that boost is, everyone should be utilizing that. Like even if you don't want to do it, you don't want to drink sports drinks, just swish it and spit the thing out, because there is definitely a spark that goes off in your mind when your body thinks carbs are coming in.
I think it's such a good strategy, especially for towards the end of a race when you're passing an aid station. Just grab it, even if you don't want to stomach it, grab it, swish it around, spit it out on the ground, keep running. I think, yeah, it's a good little tool to have in the toolbox if you remember.
Yeah, I think this is an important thing that I will talk about. I didn't touch on much with the dehydration, is once you get to a certain point of dehydration as well, your stomach just stops working. Like your gastrointestinal tract gets so dehydrated. And this is often why you see people, they have to get IV fluids to rehydrate. Like I called in an IV. So I could have, to be fair, I could have orally rehydrated. I just had things to do. So I just had to chuck in an IV, get the fluid in, go. But I was so dehydrated, it would have taken me 2-3 times longer than what it would have normally taken to rehydrate myself, because I allowed myself to get so dehydrated. By the end of the race, just to give you guys numbers, this is terrible and I shouldn't say it in a public thing, but I was over 10% my body weight dehydrated, which isn't out of the ordinary. Like you hear, you know, elite marathon runners, it does happen. But again, that's okay when everything's planned for and you've got this. I wasn't particularly planning for this, and I just kind of went completely off script, and this was a consequence of it. And 10% body weight dehydration can be very, very severe. And like, obviously I know how to deal with it, and I was able to recognize, okay, my gastrointestinal tract is not taking on food. It's not taking on fluid as fast as it should be. I know the rate I should be able to get these electrolytes in. It's not happening. Let's just get an IV, and let's just call one of our doctor friends to get an IV. And that's fine. And like, that's fine for me when I have access to all of that and all that knowledge. But for the everyday person who's listening to this, that can be a very, very scary, sticky situation if you ever found yourself and you don't know what to do, or you don't have access to that type of medical equipment or whatever. So appreciating that as well when you're running, that staying on top of your hydration is going to be so advantageous for you to be able to digest and absorb the carbohydrates that you're eating. Like just for that fact alone, if you're doing any high intensity effort, like if you're running even a half marathon, a marathon where you really want to book it and you want to hit a good PB, like you're going to have to keep your intestinal tract hydrated enough to absorb the fuel that you're putting in. And part of that is getting that fluid in regularly and getting enough in. And you have to train that, because if you try to just go out like I did and run that pace, your body's not going to be able to do it.
I think as well with what you just mentioned in terms of how severe your dehydration was and the impact that that has, if you are in that instance feeling like that, you try to eat or eat and you can't stomach anything, then naturally you're not going to drink, you're not going to eat. And then that dehydration and that glycogen depletion is just going to be exacerbated and it's just going to get worse. So it's, yeah, being able to recognize, okay, something is seriously wrong here. How can I get around it? Because yes, it's normal to not tolerate food after an event like that or to feel sick. But unfortunately, you know, avoiding eating or drinking is only going to make things worse. So you do have to bear that uncomfortable period and try and get something down. But I'm glad you had access to it. But like you said, not everyone has access to someone that is qualified to do IV drips.
Yeah, and again, it's that point of no return. You just don't want to get to it. Like you just don't want to get to the point of no return. And like at a certain point, like everyone has to change what they have to eat. Like all of a sudden, like if I'm eating bananas, dates and pikelets, they're going to become very unappealing at some stage. Like that's just inevitable, and you switch strategy, right? And then I might have to go on, if I'm doing 100k, maybe after 70k's in, I can only drink Coca-Cola out of a 250ml can. I have to get a Vegemite scroll or a couple of noodles. That's the only thing I can stomach. But you still have to make an effort to do that and still have to make an effort to put it in, because once you go past that point of no return where you can't stomach anything, and it, like Loz says, it's just deterioration. You're just going to go further and further and further down the ditch, and you're going to end up in a really bad situation. Like luckily I was 5 minutes from home. Like I've got lots of good contacts around. Well, I was running in Brisbane, so I know, grew up here, I've got lots of contacts around here, so I could get all these people in. But like if you're out in the middle of the desert or the bush running a race and you get that dehydrated, you can be in a bit of a sticky spot.
Okay, hopefully anyone that's listening from this is thinking, yep, okay, cool, need a good plan, need to try and stick to it. Again, the most well-intentioned plan can sometimes go out the window, as we've mentioned, but it is super important to stay on top of your hydration and nutrition during these endurance events. I know we always go on about it, probably sound like a broken record, but we have to. It's super important.
Yeah, agreed. Like I said, again, even coaches need coaches, and sometimes we make mistakes. But again, hugely valuable. Like Loz says, like I'm glad I didn't learn any of these lessons in my actual race that I'm training for in a few weeks. So yeah, very, very glad I went through that. Could have been very bad. If I was to tell anyone to take any lesson from it, like Love said, just practice it, be smart, don't get in the ditch. Even if you find you can't handle it and you go, okay, on like my 10, 15K run, I just after 8Ks, I can't handle it, go smaller, do some 5, 6K runs and then build up to it and get your body good with it. Like it's not a negotiation. You need to get your body fine with this, because at the end, at some point, especially if you're doing any type of endurance event, it doesn't even have to be like the crazy ultra stuff, any type of endurance event, you're going to have to flick over where your mind is pushing your body, and your body might be the thing that shuts down and goes, you know what, like, we're not going anymore. And like, your mind might want to keep pushing you to go, but if your body just can't do it, you just can't do it. And that's where this all becomes so, so important. It's like, it's fine to push a sore body if that sore body is stocked up on glycogen, if it's got carbs coming in, it's well hydrated or hydrated enough to a point where it can keep going, then fine. Use your mind to push that as much as possible. But when we're getting in that area where, no, it doesn't have any of those things, that's where it's really dangerous. So practice it.
I look forward to doing this all again after the 100K and hopefully having a better experience because you learned from this one. So looking forward to it and super pumped for that event that you're training so hard for.
Yeah, we'll chat after. We'll book it in, Loz. Hopefully it's a better.
Awesome. But I reckon that's a pretty good rundown. So hopefully people can learn. I've definitely learned, you know, it's a couple of mistakes not to make. Thanks, Geordie. But no, that was good. Thanks for sharing.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and if you follow along our socials at @_fightdietitian, you can see all of the best bits from our podcast episodes. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the TFD Performance Podcast.